Perspective basis on the personality of God and Narayan, on the Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, on the Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and on the Shri Vyasa Devata, by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services on the pure devotees, all that is troublesome and half becomes practically restored almost anew, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, whose praise with transcendental hymns comes into being established as a new vocal effect. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text 38. Nunyam, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. Please repeat, my dear Lord.
My dear Lord.
You are a worthy son of Lord Brahma.
You are a worthy son of Lord Brahma.
And you travel.
And you travel.
Playing on your musical instrument.
Playing on your musical instrument.
The Veena.
The Veena.
For the welfare of the entire universe.
For the welfare of the entire universe.
You are like the sun.
You are like the sun.
Which rotates in the universe.
Which rotates in the universe.
For the benefit of all living beings.
For the benefit of all living beings.
Dhruva Maharaj, although a young child, expressed his hope that he might be offered the benediction of a kingdom which would exceed in opulence those of his father and grandfather. He also expressed his gladness that he had met such an exalted person as Narada, whose only concern was to illuminate the world like the sun, which rotates all over the universe only for the purpose of benefiting the inhabitants of all planets. Narada Muni travels all over the universe for the sole purpose of performing the best welfare activity for the entire universe by teaching everyone how to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus Dhruva Maharaj felt fully assured that Narada Muni could fulfill his desire, even though the desire was very extraordinary. The example of the sun is very significant. The sun is so kind that he distributes his sunshine everywhere without consideration. Dhruva Maharaj was strongly determined to fulfill his desire, and it was for that purpose that he had left his home and palace. Nyunam Bhavam Bhagavato Yongaja Paramishtina Itundat Devinam Kaya Jagato Kavat. My dear Lord, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel, playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun, which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. Oma jnana tamarandasya jnana angana salakaya chakshuramitam nina kasma shi gurave nama Sri Chaitanya manopristam bhagadam nina bhutare Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dittati Svamudam Dittam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shivasa Yoga Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. We'll read a couple of verses just to bring us up to position. Dhruva Maharaj said, my dear Lord Naradaji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly a very good instruction. But as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance, and this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. My dear Lord, I am very impotent for not accepting your instructions. But this is not my fault. It is due to my having been born in a Kshatriya family. My stepmother Suruchi has pierced my heart with her harsh words. Therefore your valuable instructions does not stand in my heart. O learned Brahmana, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone, even by my fathers and grandfathers. If you will oblige, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. My dear Lord, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. So Dhruva Maharaj was a very young boy, I think 5 years of age, 5 years old. He was very young and a very tender age. But at the same time, we can see that he's not an ordinary boy. And he has great determination. This determination is the price of achieving anything. If you don't have determination, you get nothing. The difference between the animal and the human is the human has a different type of determination. You see? Because if you look at the human and the animal, they both have a determination. But their determination is in bodily relationship. So they have bodily relationship. So therefore their determination, just like an animal, is very determined to catch food. And if you see, They have great dexterity, great intelligence, ability to achieve that goal. So if you study their psychology, Prabhupada calls expectant psychology. Everyone in the material world has got expectant psychology. You know the meaning of expectant psychology? It means you're expecting something to happen. Everybody's expecting something to happen. And this expectation, this hope, is also there in Dhruva Maharaj. He has a desire. So behind every activity there's some desire. And that desire is manifested in a certain type of determination. So as Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, on contemplating the senses, one develops a certain type of attachment. From that attachment, then the lust develops. So this lust, or this raja, what is called raja guna, then that is the energy by which one achieves certain types of results. Just like we can see, modern society, very much in the mode of passion. A lot of passion is there. Now that passion is in some ways bad, but in some ways good. Because at least with this passion, there's activity. Bhakti Siddhanta once said about the Gaudiya Math, he said that, "I wish I could make them a little bit more passionate." Because the energy level, if you go to any Gaudiya Math temple, you'll find there's a lot of brahmacharis sitting around, sannyasis may be there or whatever, and generally speaking, the energy level is very much sort of mode of goodness. There's a mode of goodness, everyone's sitting, ringing little bells, there's samadhi there, prasadam is there, everyone has a nice rest after prasadam, and there's some activities going on, but the energy level is very much what we would call peaceful, very relaxed. So Prabhupada said that one of the dangers of spiritual life is the to become affected by the mode of goodness. Now normally we say mode of goodness is very nice, because mode of goodness means you're a good person. You're very sadhu, Hare Krishna, Shanti, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Many times you find Indian people come to the temple. They have much more qualities, at least than I have. I see they have good qualities, they're good people, their heart is good. But there's not much passion, you see, to get anything really achieved. If they come, Sunday program, there's a nice talk, some prasad, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Maharaj Akadashi, Hare Bol, Hare Bol. And they go home. You see? And when they go home, we don't know what goes on. But at least in the temple, it's all very goodness, a lot of goodness. Now, the danger of spiritual life is one becomes conditioned by what is called happiness. You can become conditioned by happiness just as much as you can become conditioned by any mode. Passion. You see, passion for a devotee, if you're very passionate, you're very lusty, then generally you stand out like a sore thumb, isn't it? If you're running around, you know, lusting all over the place, then you go, "Hey Prabhu, you got a few problems." But if you're mode of goodness, you get up, do a little japa, go back to bed, little prasad, go back to bed, a little bit more prasad, go back to bed, then that's considered, oh, shanti, shanti. There's no real anxiety. So the mode of goodness generally, when people have a little happy situation, nice room, the zip, when the saridara vijajal, something comes. You see, as long as something comes, and then you take a little nap, and then if you feel like it, you can go and sankirtan. If you don't feel like it, don't push me. If I feel like it, I will go. If I don't feel like it, well, I'm here, Krishna's here, I'm here, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. You see? So this becomes actually, in the Gaudiya Math, was actually a problem for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, because he wanted some passion, some fire to spread this Krishna conscious movement, you see? Because this Krishna conscious movement requires a bit of energy. It's not going to spread just because we're sitting in the temple enjoying nice peaceful life. So we can see that Dhruva Maharaj, even at the age of 5, there's a planet called Dhruva Loka. He achieved a huge planet. That planet, the whole universe rotates around that planet. Now, it appears that Dhruva Maharaj was obviously, being a Kshatriya, was very determined. Drihavrita. Drihavrita means when there's great determination. There's great determination. He had great determination. He had so much determination that even the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart was moved by his determination. So Krishna was captured by this boy's determination. Otherwise, how many five-year-olds want this, to want to become a king, or want to become a train driver, or they want to become something, isn't it? There's lots of 5 years old who want to become something, a footballer when they grow up. But Dhruva Maharaj wanted to become so powerful that even his ancestors would be less than him. So he had a great determination. And we should learn from this, because actually his determination was so powerful that even the great sage Narada Muni came there, you see? In other words, because he had determination, he was able to attract the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was able to attract Narada Muni. Now, why was he able to attract Krishna? Because he asked his mother. Actually, what happened was, of course, he was insulted by his stepmother. And that insult went straight into his heart. One thing about a Kshatriya is once a Kshatriya is insulted, then he has to fight till the death. That was one of the codes. There are many codes by which Kshatriyas existed. And one of them was that if a Kshatriya was offended, then he had to either die or punish the offender. Now, when that offense or that went into his heart, then he became very, very disturbed in his heart. He wanted to, because he was a young boy, he couldn't do anything. So there was a mixture of helplessness and great determination. So he went to his mother and explained his situation. And she, being a great devotee, said, well, the only person who can help you is the Supreme Personality of God. So he said, okay, where is Krishna? Where can I find Vishnu? And she told him that, well, I've seen great sages go to the forest. They live in the forest and they find God. So he went to the forest and performed great austerities. For a boy to do that, obviously he was supernatural. In one sense, he was an ordinary child. But at least by his great determination, he was able to capture the mind, the heart of Narada Muni and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Narada was very impressed by this boy's determination. He was so determined that even he's almost chastising Narada that you've given such wonderful instructions, but I can't hear this because my determination is such that I have to achieve a greater kingdom than my father. And he was so much determined for that, that nothing could shake him. Now, one of the things which you see lacking in a lot of ways in spiritual life is determination. Because where does determination come from? See, where does it come from? Where does determination come from?
Association.
Yeah, but let's take Dhruva Maharaj. Now, he's a young boy, 5 years of age. How did he become so determined?
Desire.
Huh?
Desire.
Ah.
Desire.
Very strong desire is one. You have to have very strong desire, because if your desire is not there, activity is based on desire. So there has to be this first principle of attachment. You see? Because Krishna even says in the Bhagavad Gita, by contemplating the senses, there should be some attachment. Now, in Krishna consciousness, that's called sambandha. What is called sambandha jnana. The relationship, understanding the relationship that we have with Krishna. There has to be some attachment to that relationship. because just like Dhruva Maharaj was attached to his family situation, but because he had very strong attachment, he had very strong determination. And the thing is that what you find in spiritual life is actually a lack of attachment. You see? There's a lack of attachment. Because by nature we're all attached to our bodies. This is natural. We're all attached to our mind, the activities of our mind, mental activities, physical activities. So when we bring in something like spiritual life, then the attachment is very weak. In the beginning it's very weak. Therefore, how do we become more attached, as you said, sadhusanga? There has to be in the beginning little faith, shraddha. Then that shraddha makes us more attached because we have little faith of the goal. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, he only saw the goal. His determination for the goal was immense. Huge determination for the goal. So then, in order to achieve the goal, there has to be some activity. So his mother told him, you have to go and associate with the sages in the forest. You have to go to the forest and find God. So he went to the forest, and now he's associating with Narada Muni. So this sadhusanga, when sadhusanga is there, then by association of other devotees, then the faith becomes nishtha. Nishtha means fixed up. It has to become fixed up, very fixed up. Sometimes we use the phrase, this devotee is a bit flaky, isn't it? Not quite, just flaking around, you know? Blowing around like a leaf in the winter, autumn wind. Sometimes our mind is going here, sometimes we're going there, sometimes we want to have holidays, we want to have a nice time, we want this, we want that. So there's this lack of determination. And I've seen the change in the years, over the years in ISKCON. More and more it's become more and more watered down. The determination is more. For whatever reason, it might be because we heard this and we saw that and we feel this and we see that. So we become weak in our determination. Now if you look at it from Dhruva Maharaj's point of view, he didn't have anything. He had nothing. He didn't have an institution to support him. He didn't have any anyone bringing him prasadam every day. He didn't have even a nice van to go back to or a house to go back to. He's living in the jungle. Now the jungle in India is not like the jungle here. Jungle here, you might find a few squirrels. Here, there is tigers, snakes, and jackals, and so many things are there. It's not a joke. If you go to Africa and see a jungle, you won't go near it. You won't run in there and start standing on your toes. Not even for 1 minute. Rather, if you have a gun and 5 men with you, you might think of going in there and staying for a while. So, we can't conceive of the determination of Dhruva Maharaj. He's such a young boy, he can't protect himself. But still, he had this immense determination. Now, the thing is that what brought about that determination was an insult by his stepmother, Suruchi. She insulted him. So, from that, he became determined. Now, in Krishna consciousness, why do we become determined? Why do we even search after spiritual life? You know why? Because we've also been insulted by Maya. Maya has made a fool of us. She's made an idiot of us. She's made us dull-headed. She's made us so that we're just walking around like zombies. We don't know what we're doing. We don't know why we're here. We don't know where we're going. We don't know if it's a good thing to do what we're doing, if it's a bad thing we're doing. We don't know what day of the week it is. We don't know what year it is. We don't know what government should be there. So these are all an insult to our intelligence. Actually, material life is an insult to your intelligence because one becomes embarrassed. Everyone in the material world is embarrassed. It is said that the soul is embarrassed. Not embarrassed as the soul, but we're on account of non-manifestation. of spiritual illumination. We are embarrassed. Now, the material energy is there to basically whip us. We are being whipped by the senses, by the mind, by the material energy itself, by other living entities. These are all called klesha. The klesha means the pangs, or the just like when someone sticks a knife in you, that is called klesha. It's a real thing. It's not something philosophical. When someone sticks a knife in your bum, that's called klesha. Adibhautika klesha. It's called the pangs of material life. So, somehow or other, we become little intelligent. You see, just like Dhruva Maharaj. He saw the situation. He'd been insulted. But instead of being a wimping little kid who went in the corner and cried his eyes out and kicked his toys around, no, he was Kshatriya. He decided that even if I have to die, I have to avenge this insult. So, in one sense, similarly with us, we have to understand that we should be very clear what is the principle of coming to Krishna consciousness. Why are we here? What are we doing here? Is it that we want to come here to sit, look at the walls? Have we come here to pass stool in the toilet? What is our purpose of being here? We have to think of that. The human body is a short journey. We're here for a very short time. Now, if we are not convinced of our purpose, Prabhupada said, this is like a man who's pretending to be asleep. You see, if someone's pretending to be asleep, nothing can wake him up. Have you ever tried to wake a devotee up who's pretending to be asleep? He goes, ah, and he moves over that way. Then you come, he moves that way. You can't wake him up because he doesn't want to know. Basically, he's just going to keep pretending. Even for, you come back for 1 hour, 2 hours. He's decided, I ain't getting up. And the only way I can avoid an argument with this guy is if I pretend I'm asleep. And he moves me this way, he moves me that way, he shouts. So what we used to do sometimes was pour water on the head. Then it was hard to pretend to be asleep. But that, those days are gone. And we used to do that at one time. A little bucket of water, pour it on the head, and the whole sleeping bag becomes wet, and he has to get out. But the point is that if someone is pretending to be asleep, it's very difficult to wake them up. So this determination, if it's not there, so what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Who knows about this? Why it's not there? That's a bogus. For those who are too much attached to material sense gratification, the resolute determination of devotional service does not take place. Now this resolution of determination of devotional service is exactly what we are talking about with Dhruva Maharaj. For some reason, whatever reason, he became completely resolute in his determination. For what? For meditating on Krishna, which is devotional service. And because of that devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself appeared to him. So, when we talk about a price, just like everything has a price, when you go to the market, you buy some cloth, you pay a price. You pay some food, you pay a price. Now, depending on the quality of the thing, the price increases, isn't it? Isn't it? If you go and buy a Rolex watch, some of them are £3,500, £4,000. Now, if you go to Woolworths and buy the latest Timex or whatever, you pay less. So, the quality and the quantity, the quantifiable, qualifiable aspect of a thing determines its price. If you want to have a very nice house, you pay the money. There's houses which cost £4 or £5 million. There's other houses you can get for 50p. If you go to Newcastle, Manchester, Moss Side, you can buy 40p, you can buy a house. But if you want to have Regent's Park in London, next to some royal celebrity or whatever, then you have to pay £5 million. Even sometimes a flat, one room, a couple of rooms is £5 million. Depending on the location. So therefore we can understand that every particular thing has its price. Now, what are we trying to do? We are trying to actually, in a sense, capture the Supreme Personality of God. You see? Because Dhruva Maharaj wanted, he knew from his mother's instruction that the only person who could help him was the Supreme Personality of God. So he had to capture the attention of God. Now, to capture the attention of God is not an easy thing. Just like if I say to you, I want you to capture the attention of Mr. Blair, Prime Minister of London, England. It's not an easy thing. If you go around outside his house blowing bubbles from a little... I don't think he's... You probably think he's that idiot. Get rid of him. So it's not that you can do something stupid and expect that a big personality will be impressed. Big personality means big thing to impress. Big thing to impress. That's why... Why is it that Dhruva Maharaj is remembered in the Bhagavatam? Because he did a big thing. That big thing is that he had huge determination to approach God. And Prabhupada said this determination is, if you like, the price of Krishna consciousness. Now, because of our weakness, everybody, material life means to be weak. Everything in the material world is weak. Our consciousness is weak, our body is weak, our determination is weak, our mental activities are very weak. 1 minute we're thinking one thing, then we're thinking another. 1 minute we're determined to become the biggest Harinam Prabhu in the world, or the biggest book distributor in the world. The next minute we don't know whether we should go to the movies or the discotheque. Because everything in the mind is always changing and shifting. Everything, the desires are constantly coming up, the other ones are going down, the desires from last week sometimes reappear, the ones from 10 years ago reappear, the ones from today come, the ones go. In this way, there's always a constant battle within the heart. There's a constant battle. There's a constant battle between the mode of passion, the mode of goodness, the mode of ignorance. Generally, in Kali Yuga, we're in the mode of ignorance. Some passion is there. But, as it says in the Bhagavatam, that in the Kali Yuga, people are lazy, they're misguided, they are always prone to intoxication, craziness. So we can understand that this particular age is a very precarious age. Because why? Everyone is very weak. If you look at society, spiritually it's very weak. Individually we're very weak. People have become wimps, isn't it? They're wimps. Basically you see them, they're carrying their wife shopping and wife is beating them, come on George, hurry up. They become pathetic. Kali Yuga means pathetic people. If you go into Birmingham now today and see, you can make note, and you see all of these, they look like washed up, isn't it? Washed up from the battle. Sometimes after a big battle, there's all these washed up characters. Somebody looks like he got hit in the head with a club. Someone else has got an arrow sticking out of his head. So when you go into any town center, all you're seeing is casualties. So casual means casual. You understand? When you become casual in the material world, when you want to relax, you become casual. Because just like when you're doing something, anything very serious, like you're driving 80 miles in the motorway, you have to be always attentive. Because any one wrong move and everything is chaos. So Prabhupada said this Krishna consciousness is like a razor's edge. It's like when you're shaving. If you're 1 minute you're in it, oh, cut is there. So if we want to become Krishna conscious, then in actuality, when we look at Dhruva Maharaj, why was he so determined, a young boy of 5 years of age? Because he came in a long line of kings. He came in his family inheritance was he was from a great Kshatriya lineage. Great Kshatriya lineage. So already he had the qualities from birth. And then, on top of that, because he had been blessed by Narada, then he was able to perform Krishna consciousness. So, we should be very careful because when we approach devotional service, Prabhupada says anything in the material world, if Familiarity breeds contempt. You know that? It breeds contempt. Because as soon as you become familiar with something, you automatically, the human psychology, the psychology is that when anything is familiar, then you automatically subject it to your dominating principle. Everybody wants to dominate something. Now you find, you can see this psychology. A boy doesn't know a girl. A girl doesn't know a boy. As soon as they mix together, boy and girl, they start to try and dominate each other. There's a whole, they call it the battle of the sexes or whatever, but there's a whole psychology of familiarity. They become more and more familiar with each other. And you find most marriages end up with contempt. The husband and wife hate each other. But it's not so manifested. But even now, 40% of marriages divorce in the first few years. Because this natural thing is when something becomes familiar, when we become familiar, just like this temple, because we're familiar with it, we have a contempt for it. Birmingham. Got to go to Birmingham. So we have no interest. We're coming here, basically, but there's a certain contempt. We don't want to preach here. We don't care about the Birmingham people. We don't care about what the building looks like. We don't care if it's clean. We don't care anything. Because we become familiar. You understand my point? We become overly familiar with that thing. It's the same with our devotional service. When we become overly familiar with it, then it becomes contemptuous. We have no interest in it, really. We do all the motions. Oh, yeah. Haribo, book distribution. Again. But it looks good. Hey, Prabhu, books. Haribo, books. Let's go, Haribo. When we get out there, cool. So this is also to be very careful. Because actually your service is your, Prabhupada said, umbilical cord to Krishna. You know what umbilical cord? When you're in the womb, there's a cord that links you with the mother. So your service is your cord with Krishna. And service without feeling, Krishna has no interest in it. There's no interest. You may do all the movements and you may do all the so-called, what do you call it? Motions, going through the motions. Krishna is not interested in your motions. Going to the toilet also requires motions, isn't it? But it's not. What is the difference between your service and going to the toilet? Is there any difference? It's all motions, isn't it? Something's going on, you're moving something. Huh? So, is it that when we come to Mangalati, it's the same feeling as going to the toilet? Is it our japa should become the same feeling? Body's doing something. The mind is doing something else. So the point is that be very, very careful that you don't, when you're rendering service to Krishna, this is your offering to Krishna. Whether it's cleaning the kitchen, whether it's cooking for Krishna, whether it's going in Harinam, if you don't have any feeling, the reason Rupa Maharaj captured Krishna was because of fear. He had such a determined feeling for his particular desire, such determination that Krishna actually was captured by that. There's a very nice story in the Nectar Devotion. I don't know if you read, where that one great yogi was meditating on the bank of the Ganga River, and he was making sweet rice for the Supreme Personality of God. In his mind, he was making sweet rice. Have you ever made sweet rice in your mind? Huh? It's not easy. You try it sometime. And you can't eat it before it's offered. But he was making sweet rice, and he was in such meditation of offering that sweet rice to Krishna that he wanted to take it to see if it was hot, too hot for offering. The sweet rice should be cold. And it says that by touching the sweet rice, he burnt his finger. He woke up from his meditation. Now, the Supreme Lord Vishnu was so pleased with his devotion that he brought him back to Bhagavad. So the point is that he wasn't, what was he doing, which was special? The feeling was there. You see, the feeling was there. The feeling is there. So we should be very careful. Service is not something which is just simply to keep us busy. It's not to keep us busy. It's not, if we want to be busy, there's so many things we can do just for the sake of being busy. There are, everyone on this planet is busy. You see? Even the cockroach is running around, he's busy, isn't he? He's not sitting idle, he's busy. Everyone's busy. So being busy is not the point. The point is that what we're doing to try to please Krishna. So, as Krishna says, that the great souls, they worship me with great determination and faith. They offer devotion unto me. So this determination and faith has to be very, very strong. Otherwise, simply we become weak. We become, if there's no faith and there's no determination, then simply it becomes all hackneyed. Hackneyed means stale, just like food. Food, if you leave it running around too long, what happens to it? Isn't it? It just becomes stale. Anything in the material world, if it's neglected, becomes useless. So similarly, if our service is not something important to us, if it's not very, we don't have much attachment or attraction to that, then it becomes hackneyed, stale. There's no feeling there. Therefore our japa won't have any feeling, our reading has no feeling, our determination has no feeling. Prabhupada said that the way you capture Krishna is by your sincerity. So sincerity means many things, but at least it means that there's some deep feeling, sincerity, in what we do. So that's why it brings us to this point when we talk about doing preaching work. Narada Muni travels throughout the entire universe to preach. Now Narada, if you see Narada, he's always traveling around playing his veena. But if you look at the history of the Bhagavatam, you find Narada is the spiritual master of so many wonderful devotees. Balarama Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Vyasadeva. You see? Because he's always busy. But what is his busy? He's busy glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because of that, then he's doing so much preaching. Now, coming to this point, that as devotees, we have to actually have some feeling for what we're doing. Otherwise it becomes, if there's no real attachment, no feeling, then it becomes such a burden. You know, it becomes such a sort of, such an effort. Everything becomes such an effort because there's no utsaha. What is that word, utsaha? Yeah, there should be great enthusiasm. Without that utsaha, the whole thing is very dry, stale. So where does that enthusiasm come from? In the beginning it comes from faith. But later on, when you're a little bit more, it comes from ruchi, from taste. You see, you have to develop a taste. Because everything is based upon taste. Just like, why do people like sex? Because there's some taste. You see? Isn't it? Why are people mad after sex life? Because there's some nice feeling. There's some good feeling from it. All sorts of psychological and physical feelings come from sex. That's why all the magazines, the television, the radio, the conversation of most boys and girls is all interrelated with some sex life. So that rasa, that is called rasa. Sex means rasa. So in the material world, we are mad after rasa. We want to eat something, have some sex, do this, do that. So we must also be having spiritual rasa. Otherwise we can't become very enthusiastic. There has to be some rasa. That's why Dhruva Maharaj, finally when he saw Krishna, he realized that this rasa from Krishna consciousness, so much superior. He said, I was chasing some glass and now I have some priceless jewels. So he didn't want anything from Krishna. When he finally saw Krishna, he didn't want anything except Krishna. So that was the wonderful potency of Krishna consciousness. So similarly, we must in the beginning have some determining factor which keeps us very enthusiastic. Otherwise we become dried up, like a dried old fig. You know, it's like prune. You become a dried up old prune. Sometimes they say that, isn't it? You're like an old prune. Huh? You're just an old prune. So we don't want to be...
Juice.
Huh?
No juice.
No juice. Just dried up, shriveled up. So sometimes we can become like that, just an old dried up, shriveled old prune of the Brahmacharya ashram. Lost all hope. Just sitting there, moaning, groaning, moaning. Another moan. And then another devotee comes in, moan, moan. So they both sit there, moan, 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 moan. We don't want to become like that. So preaching, Prabhupada said, means life. One who has life, he can preach. If you have no life, you can't preach. You know why you have to have life? Because you're getting taste, you see? When you're getting that taste, you have life. Why do these businessmen, you see these guys with the mobile phones and the computers, and they're up at 6 in the morning, they're driving down here, hey Charlie, get on to that thing, I heard New York Stock Exchange is moving fast, get over to Hong Kong there, Fred, see what's going on. They've got life, these guys are buzzing, they need to tell those guys to get up in the morning. You don't need to tell them to be in the office by 6:30. They're there, isn't it? High flyers, they call them. They're flying, boy, they're flying. We're sitting there going, no, 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 no. That prasadam was burnt yesterday. I knew that would happen. So, they have life because they're getting taste. We have no taste. So we have no life. You see? Just like the ants. You see when there's nice sugar on the floor in India, all the ants come. They come out of everywhere. Out of the ceiling, out of the wall, out of the floor. They're going. So we have to get some taste in our devotional service. So preaching means life. We get life from taste, ruchi. There has to be some ruchi. Why does Narada Muni travel all over? Because he's in ecstasy. Some Narada Muni Bhajaya Vina. Radhika Ramana. He's always singing the pastimes of Radhika Ramana, Radha and Krishna. And he's feeling so much ecstasy. Sometimes his Brahman thread breaks. His body goes into such a expanded state of ecstasy that his Brahman thread goes bling. You see? So these great Vaishnavas, they're always tasting the nectar of spreading Krishna consciousness. Now, Narada Muni is one of the greatest devotees. We're not the greatest devotee. None of us can say we're great devotees. Right? Yet Narada Muni, what is his business? He's one of the greatest devotees in the universe. What is his business? Preaching. So we're so fortunate we have opportunity to do what he's doing. And we have no qualification to do it. He has qualification. He has seen Krishna face to face. When we see darkness. But by great fortune, because we are following in the line of Narada Muni, he is our guru. He's the spiritual master of Vyasadeva. So he's our guru. So by his grace, we have the same opportunity. Prabhupada said, every one of you can become Narada Muni. He said that in one class. Every one of you can become Narada Muni. So the point is, how do we become Narada Muni? We have to follow in the line of Narada. What did he do? He associated with the sadhus. He took prasad from the sadhus. He heard the Bhagavatam. He heard the katha. And he went all over the world. On the top of his voice, he was always chanting Hare Krishna very loudly. Nothing, he didn't do anything which we can't do. But he did it, and we didn't. One time Prabhupada was giving an example that there's some godbrothers were saying, oh, what you did, anyone could have done. So Prabhupada said it's like Columbus when he discovered America, whatever, and so many other great navigators. Explorers, they said, oh, well, we could have done that. Then he got this egg out. And he said, okay, make this egg stand up. Now, you know an egg is round, and if you try to make it stand up, it rolls, isn't it? So these other guys that were having a talk with him, then they were trying to, for ages, they were trying to make it stand up. So in the end, they gave up. They said, okay, you make it stand up. So he got the egg, he went, just tapped it enough so that the point went flat, the external. They all said, oh, we could have done that. You see? Yeah, you could have done, but you didn't do. So similarly, Krishna consciousness is very simple. And anyone can do it. But who is doing it? Who is following Narada Muni? Who is following Dhruva Maharaj? So the point is that we can do it, but we have to be, one thing is, we have to be sincere. Otherwise, without sincerity, then Krishna doesn't, he's not attracted to some showy rituals. Prabhupada used to call it ringing bells. So many temples just getting up, ding, 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 with no real life. So temples should have life. So, bringing on this point, that more and more I notice anyway, that the young men, especially young boy, you know, young lad, they should be very attached to what they're doing at that age. When you get to my age, you get a bit older. It gets harder. But when you're young, you should have a very clear idea, because that's the most determined time in your life. Youth, when you have this strong vigor, strong energy, and good physical well-being, healthy body, then you should be very determined. But I see most people, what is it said? There was one saying I read on a notice board once. It said, either you make history, he said, no, some people make history and some people are history. You see? So there's a whole psychology that either we're just part of what's going on or we create things that go on. There's a little difference, isn't it? If you're just part of something that's going on, that means you're just, you know, like following along. But if you're creating things that go on, then that's something extra special. So these programs, like this traveling bus program, it should be very dynamic. But sometimes I see it looks like, isn't it? Sometimes it's like this and that. So it means there's something not quite there. And I don't know what that thing is. Do you know? Huh? What is your analysis of the bus program? See, when it came to the manor, the devotees were very impressed. Oh, these fired up brahmacharis, Harinam every day, bye, Haribo, Jai, Haribo, Garanga, Nitai, Haribo. But behind the scenes, getting a little wobbly. But there's no reason that it should, because it's such an ecstatic program. You go out, you preach, do kirtan, book distribution, come back, hear about Krishna, take nice prasad, and how can you have anything better? How can you have anything better? But I don't know. So the thing is that this determination to do anything, it seems to be a very difficult thing to quite get it, you know? And Kali Yuga is very, everyone is, practically speaking, they're totally trashed by the material energy in Kali Yuga. So we have to set an example. You know, as devotees, we have to set an example so that people can see, oh, there's some life there. Some life for serving Krishna. So I don't know. I'm mentioning it because it's relevant, actually, in the sense that I don't see so much determination. I see a lot of kind of, you know, I don't want to get into it too much, but sort of up and down, up and down. What do you think, Mary? Huh? Is it up now or is it down now? Huh? Is it? Down for you as well. Down for you as well. Huh? Huh?
I'm getting on all right at the moment.
Yeah. But where does the problem lie? Is it a collective problem or an individual problem? But there's also this, I don't know, I mean, you can't run a program on thin air. You have to have some money coming in. So, you know, there's this puritanical thing which has been there since the Dublin days and whatever, you know, that unless, you know, you get these devotees, which is wonderful. You get devotees who go out all day long and come back with 50p. But they're being completely pure devotees in the street. Now, to me, it doesn't seem logical how you can run anything on that. And I personally have been doing projects for the last 30 years and I've never found an easy way to get money. If someone knows it, please tell me, because I would be a very happy man. If you want Lakshmi, you sweat. Either you sweat one way or you sweat another way. Now, you can't do anything. I mean, I'll give you an example. I stayed with Jim and Helen. Now, they both get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, every single morning, right? They both shower and they're out the door. She's out by 5:30, he's out by 6. He drives a bus. Now, driving a bunch of old-age pensioners down to Brighton is not the most exciting thing in your life, is it? And you're all sitting there, you know, drooling along the carpet or all. Then either that or he brings kids to the swimming pool or to the park. Now he's doing that year in, year out, day in, day out. He doesn't, it's not that when he goes one day he wants a different bus, or he wants a different crowd, or he wants the weather to be different, or he wants to be driving in Malaga or Spain instead of, you know, Halsden. But he does it every single day, year in, year out. Why? There's a reason behind it. He doesn't like doing it. He does it because he has to do it. Simple as that. Now, one of the things with Krishna consciousness, which is wonderful, you don't have to do anything. There's nothing you have to do. If you don't want to get up, I don't get up. If I don't want to wash the pots, I don't wash the pots. If I don't want to go on Harinam, I don't go on Harinam. If I don't want to clean my clothes, I don't clean my clothes. So that's where the problem comes. In the material world, people have to do things. And it's not that everyone goes out the door going, oh, work today, oh, wonderful. Work today, I'm going to get there, I'm going to do my work. Work is a complete misery for most people. But they have to do it because they need to live. They need to sustain their enjoyment level. Their enjoyment level means they have to have a house, they have to have a car, they have to have television, they don't need a way. They need money to sustain it. Now similarly, we have to capture that determination. We have to be determined. Because if we want Krishna, we're not just going to get him just because we felt like it. You don't get Krishna just because he's not your servant that is going to come rushing to you because you felt like it. We can't get up and say, hey Krishna, come on. I want you to see some pastimes. Come on, hurry up. No. So therefore, we should be 100 times more determined than these karmis. Because we're going for something real and something big. What they're going for is a bits of paper in a bag on Friday, isn't it? With a picture of Her Royal Highness, the Queen. That's all they're getting. They're getting some paper. So every one of us wants to be full of Krishna consciousness, ecstasies, isn't it? We want to be, like we read about Lord Chaitanya, ripulation, stun, rolling on the floor, foaming at the mouth. But we can't expect to get anything unless we have some determination. So these engagements that we do are very important. We need to train ourselves, we need to train our mind to understand that the thing we're doing for Krishna now is the most important thing that we're doing in our life. Not that it's something that, oh yeah, well I'm doing it because Ananda Hari said I should do it, or Guru said, or Kabina said, or whatever. We have to get out of that mentality. So I want to try and see what is it that actually can make the thing change around from being this kind of shaky, shaky to something. Now, if it's not possible, I don't know. I'm not saying it is. But what I would say is that you've got to actually start capturing the situation.
Sometimes it seems to me that, in Krishna, it's called the war on illusion. So it just seems like an incessant, never-ending battle, doesn't seem like there's any kind of, in one sense, light there again, the tunnel or something that's achievable, it's all sort of like...
Yeah, but I think a lot of things with devotees is they're completely out of touch with the material world. I mean, people I know out there that have got their own house, their own job, they are suffering like hell. Really suffering. I mean, there's people really, really suffering out there. And we have this illusion, we really do have this illusion that somehow we shouldn't suffer. We have this kind of self-righteousness that we're the ones who shouldn't suffer. It's all right for them to suffer because they're dirty, rotten, stinking karmas. But we're not dirty, rotten, stinking karmas. So we shouldn't suffer. We should never be unhappy. We should never have a difficulty. There shouldn't be any strain in our life. There shouldn't be any problems in our life. Why? Because we're pure devotees. Krishna is looking after us. Aren't you Krishna? So Krishna is our servant. This idea that Krishna should be serving us very nicely, making us happy. He can massage our feet when we put our legs up. He can come and give us nice prasada, make sure we got a comfortable bed. He can put money into our pocket. So he can do us lots of nice service. But that's not the mentality of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means, if you study the Chaitanya Charitamrita or whatever, you'll see so many devotees have so many difficult struggles in life. The Pandavas. Look at the Pandavas, how much they struggled. And they were friends with Krishna. They were living with Krishna. Krishna became even their messenger. He became their chariot driver. But they suffered like anything, because this psychology that I should be happy materially is a disease. It's a disease mentality. Now when you say, let me get to this point, when you say that you can't see the result or the end of where it's all going to end, but actually, that's not the mentality of a devotee. The mentality of a devotee is, my dear Lord, you are so kind to me. You are so very, very kind, that you put me through so much suffering, and I'm begging you, you give me more suffering. That's all I'm asking. I have only one request. Kunti Devi is praying. You give me more and more suffering. Why? Because by that suffering, I can remember your transcendental lotus feet. You see? If you don't have suffering, it's very dangerous in the material world. It's very dangerous to become happy here. It's very dangerous to become comfortable here. It's very dangerous to become complacent here. Because you are on the borderline of hell. If you could imagine yourself standing on a 500,000 feet cliff, and at the bottom is the hellish fire, damnation, snakes, pits, whatever you like, right? And the cliff is that thin, right? As thin as my two fingers. And you're standing there, right? Now you can go that way, or you can go that way. That is basically what life's all about. You are a fine line from going to hell at any moment, and you're a fine line from becoming Krishna conscious.
That's what I agree with you, that struggle is there, and perhaps that's why devotees and in my own situation that suffering is there, and if there's some wobbliness or some not being ecstatic or not having a fixed up full time program you just out there with full determination, it's just because of that really at the end of the day.
Yeah, but that just means management. You have to manage. I think the Thomas Schlotter, you could probably give some classes on that. The thing is that you have to realize there is a formula for solving our problems, but the formula is not what we normally concoct from our mind. You see, the mind is always cheating the soul. The mind is always giving evil counsel to us. We think that the mind is our friend because we identify strongly with that mind and body, but actually the mind is always giving us evil counsel. Now if you analyze your devotional life, if you analyze your psychology, if you analyze your behavior, if you do a self-analysis, very, very carefully, you will see Maya at every moment of your day. How she is cheating you, how she is making you weak, how she is putting doubts in your mind, how she is trying to make you lackadaisy in your devotional service, all of these things. Now, unless you actually analyze those, then you can't actually root out the anathas that are there. These anathas are there. There's so many anathas. Anathas don't mean just because you had illicit sex. Anathas mean every single thing which is opposed to your devotional life. And if you're not ready to actually fight those, you know, most devotees think the big battle against Maya is because you didn't have illicit sex, or you didn't have a smoke around the back or whatever. That's not the big battle. The big battle is what's going on in here. That's the war. The war is in here, not out there. If you can't fight the war in here, you can't fight the war out there. So therefore, that's why there are so many volumes and volumes of books given by the Goswamis and everything, analyzing behavior patterns, mental activities, physical behavior. Everything is analyzed minutely in like Bhakti Rasamrita Simha or whatever. So if we're not taking use of that knowledge, then if devotional service is just a whimsical activity that we do according to our whim, how we feel, then we can't actually really make progress because we're too attached to material sense gratification. Sense gratification comes in many, many forms and shapes. And if we're too bewildered by it, we can't become determined. There's no determination. So, you know, the thing is that if you're not always trying to become very determined in Krishna consciousness, then to that degree, Maya is engaging you. You only have engagement in Krishna service and Maya service. There's no in-between. There's no limbo where you gradually shift over to Krishna and gradually shift over to Maya. It's clear as night and day. You're either one or you're the other. Generally, we're the other. Or we think we're the other. We think, you know, this trickery. We think, oh, I'm very Krishna conscious. You know? Because we naturally like to assume. This cheating propensity is there.
There's an interesting point you said in relation to in our devotional service, familiarity breeds contempt. Sometimes I've been thinking about myself, sometimes I don't want to do this service or something, it becomes contemptuous. But I kind of think about that as well, but there's that verse that I don't know if this fits in, but in Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that sometimes Krishna consciousness is poisonous, it seems poisonous, and sometimes it seems nectarine. It's an kind of interesting verse. Is that relevant then?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you see, that anything which is material has material qualities about it. Now, what we're talking about in devotional service is yukta vairagya. It means engaging the material energy in the service of Krishna. We're not renunciates. We don't preach heavy renunciation. We do renounce, but not, we renounce to the degree that anything that interferes with our service to Krishna, we renounce it. What is favorable for Krishna consciousness, we accept. What is unfavorable, we reject. Now the thing is that the engaging material energies in Krishna's service, including our mind and our body, which are totally material objects, they're as material as that concrete. It's just that they're a subtler energy, that's all. Now the trouble is that devotees don't actually, like, self-determination has to be there. If we don't determine what the self is, we can't get out of this misconception of life. So we must determine that we are actually servants of Krishna. And from there, we have to gauge what has actually been used in Krishna's service, what has been used in Maya's service. So many different analyzations have to be there. But the thing is, because we see, like if I said to you now, all of you guys, go and clean the kitchen. To most people, it's a completely mundane thing. You're picking up all this rubbish and garbage, and you're cleaning, and there's nothing spiritual about it at all. You can't, you know, you can maybe look at pastimes of Krishna, yeah, he was in Vaikuntha, there's all these airplanes going flying around, and this lovely gardens, and everyone's having aroma and ecstasy and whatever. But cleaning the dirty old filthy kitchen just is nothing spiritual. But actually that's not a fact, because if you study Prabhupada, which I saw with Prabhupada, every single activity Prabhupada did was done with extreme attention and with extreme dedication. Even things which were like, seemed to be apparently very mundane, Prabhupada treated them with a super excellent kind of way. It's hard to explain how. Because he saw everything as direct manifestation of Krishna's energy. He never separated the energy from the energetic. The problem we've got is we have separated the energy from the energetic. We've separated the energy from Krishna. And because we don't have a relationship with Krishna, and because now we don't even have a relationship with the energy, you understand? Materialists have, at least they've got a relationship with the energy. They don't have a relationship with Krishna. If we don't have a relationship with Krishna, neither do we have a relationship with the energy. So Prabhupada says, at least do something which is materially beneficial or spiritual beneficial. But don't be in between. Because in between is, it's that uselessness. And a lot of people see devotees and they think, these people are useless. They're not determined materially, they're not determined spiritually. They're just lost in this kind of void, you know. Because if they were materially determined, they'd be doing something. And they'd have the initiative. This initiative is very, very important. What is initiative? It comes from consciousness. You see, Prabhupada gives an example. An ant and a mountain. The mountain may be Everest, but the ant's superior. Why? Because it has initiative. The difference between a mountain and an ant is initiative. Now, if you haven't got initiative, it means you haven't got any consciousness. You're just moving along, you know, hurry up, hurry up. You know, like robots. You got all these robots walking down. Mangalari! Then they stand there going, is it time to finish it? You know, you could almost do a movie on it, you know? All these characters. And then everyone chucked that. So if it becomes like that, what's the point? Krishna's not going to be impressed with that. You know, just all these mechanics. What time is it now? Oh, it's time to nod your head. Hurry, bo, hurry, bo, hurry, bo. But there's no initiative, there's no feeling, there's no determination, there's no attachment, there's no nothing. So that is a problem. In spiritual institutions, you have this thing where they're not attached to God, they're not attached to Krishna, and neither are they attached to the material energy. So they're kind of just lost souls. Zombies.
It's a kind of impersonalism.
Yeah.
It's
just voidism. And it is one of the things which does go on, not just in our institution, in many of these monasteries.
Well, I mean, I can definitely recognize that in myself, but I find it frustrating. I do see it in myself, but I find it very frustrating to overcome that. You know?
Yeah, but it's a stage you have to overcome because Krishna wants your feelings. You know, Krishna is after the feeling of the thing, not the simple activity of it, because it was something you had to do or you felt pressured into doing or you felt intimidated into doing or you weren't going to get a galabjaman if you didn't do it. You know what I mean? That's just... So you've got to move off of that plane. And that is very, very important, so that you move off of that, because without that, there's no raga. There's no... That's why this sadhana bhakti, you can't actually just achieve Krishna by sadhana. Sadhana is there as a support. You see, it's a support, but the object must be there to get Krishna. So the sadhana has to turn into raga. Raga means feeling, when there's feeling. There has to come this point where you actually want feeling for Krishna. You have to get feeling. What was Lord Chaitanya? You look at Lord Chaitanya, he was just a huge manifestation of unlimited feeling for Krishna. I mean, it's not that Lord Chaitanya, if you look at his life, you know, his last 18 years in Puri, it's not that he, you know, went traveling on ships around the world and did this and did that. Basically, his whole thing is feeling. The feeling of the Goswamis, the feeling of Lord Chaitanya, the feeling, that feeling has to be there. So if we're not coming to that point of feeling, then, you know, it's, danger is we become stagnated. Because we will. If you're not getting a taste, it's like if you... You know, try and imagine it. I'll give it a very clear, it's not really a good example. But suppose you went to a women's knitting club. You know, and you're sitting there, we're all knitting away, and you're sitting there, knitting away. There's no, you're not going to get excited by that. Because, you know, you can't relate to it. Now, a lot of times, similarly, a lot of the things we're doing, we can't relate to them. We don't know what the hell we're doing them for. We don't know why we're doing them, but we were told to do it. It's what I did when I joined, or, you know, this is what people do in the Hare Krishna movement. So it's really the same kind of mood. You're just sitting there going, you're just watching. But there's no feeling behind it. It's just an institutional activity. And that's very dangerous, because it is actually just another material activity. It's material, not spiritual, because there's no feeling. Prabhupada said, dedication turns matter into spirit. Study that phrase. Dedication turns matter into spirit. So if you don't have the dedication, you're material. Because it's not turning matter into spirit, you understand? So that's why when you're offering to Krishna, it's not because you're going like this that Krishna has to accept it. You know, you've got your seven circles. Oh, I missed one there. I'll go back. And then, you know, then you think, right, I got that one. Krishna has to accept that one. You know, because I got it right, didn't I? I went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Got it right. So you think Krishna's standing there going, you know, thinking, wow, look at the devotion there, you know? And then in your mind you're thinking, well, when does this end? You know? All these circles I've got to keep doing. It's boring, you know? So then what is that? But that's a lot of our Krishna consciousness is that. You know, we just do the mechanics. And because it's officially correct, therefore Krishna has to accept it. No. Similarly with your chanting. You can chant Hare Krishna for 100,000 years, but if there's no feeling, it's just an alphabet. That's according to Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda. If there's no feeling to it, then it's just, you know, you're saying the word, but it's not, there's no feeling there. So it's not that things are spiritual just because they are technically spiritual. You know, the technique. That's material idea. In the material world, everything is technology, isn't it? We use the word technology. There's a certain technology. There's a certain technique why things work. So we can't transport that over to Krishna consciousness and say, just because there's a technique, it works. You see? Because Krishna consciousness is about feeling. What is the gopi? Why are the gopis worshipped as the highest devotees? They didn't do anything technical. They weren't great mudanga players who could do double somersaults during kirtan and bounce off walls or whatever. But they had the feeling, you see? The feeling was there. So Goloka means love. It's the planet of love. Krishna is the most lovable object, and we are his lovers. Now, if we're not trying to become lovers of Krishna, then what are we trying to become?
That's exactly what the frustration is, isn't it? That lack of love within is making our hearts hard, and it's not, you can't express it for one reason or another, so...
But it has to come out. You either love Maya or you love Krishna. There's no... The living entity has to love. Love means what? Many things, but it means predominantly attachment to a thing. If you look at it in one sense, it's the attachment, the magnetic force between a thing. That thing which is drawing that thing to it. So if you're not drawn to Krishna, you have to be drawn to Maya. That's why at least 60-70% devotees go away. Because they're not getting that attachment. They're just going along with rules and regulations. And then, you know, the Prabhupada said, and it says in the Nectar Devotion also, you can actually lose Krishna consciousness by being too much attached to rules and regulations.
Niyamagra.
Just being attached to rules and regulations. Being attached to institutional activities. Being too attached to those, but not understanding the purpose behind them. And the other one is to be too negligent. So there's a balance there that you have to have. You can't be too attached to these things and not be too unattached. But you must be feeling something. You know, the feeling has to come in there. Otherwise, you can't exist without the... Rasa is the food of the soul. It's the food, the very food of the soul. If you're not getting it from Krishna consciousness, you will have to get it from Maya. Because it's like food. You know? If you get so hungry and you're in a place where there's no food, you have to go and look for another place. It forces you. Your mind will force you out.
In the we don't follow the mood of the six respondents. And the Prabhupada said they never said, "Oh, now I've met Krishna." They were saying, "Where is Krishna?" So it's explained that for us who are in this material world, we're already separate from Krishna. So therefore it's recommended not to become like thinking, "Oh, now I'm with Krishna." But it's actually, in a sense, easy for us to cultivate feelings towards Krishna in separation.
Yeah, that is our mood. But the thing is, again, on that issue, one shouldn't be so separated that he doesn't even think of Krishna. You see, the idea of separation is that the hankering is there, but the object cannot be captured. Just like Krishna hid at the rasa dance. He left the rasa dance. So the gopis were asking the trees, the plants, "Have you seen Krishna?" They were mad, basically mad. Love of Krishna is a madness. Right? So the thing is that the general mood of the Vaishnava is not that he's thinking that he's captured Krishna, because you can't capture God. God is always the autocratic. Sometimes even the word is used, despot. He does what he wants. And therefore Lord Chaitanya says, "You can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You can abuse me. You can do anything, but you're always my worshipful Lord." So in the same way, we as devotees, we should welcome the inconveniences, the distresses of life, because they're directly given to us by Krishna. So how can we challenge that? If we think that there's some evil in Krishna's activities, or that there's some, unjustifiable type of behavior by Krishna or Krishna's energy, because there's no separation between Krishna and his energy. So we know that whatever we're experiencing in Krishna consciousness is pure mercy from Krishna, and we should accept it like that. And we should be feeling, the more inconvenience we obtain, we should be feeling more and more that this is some special thing. And it is a fact that Krishna individually takes care of every single devotee. But if we want only happiness in the material sense, then we can't have happiness in the spiritual sense, because they're two complete different energies. You understand my point? You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't have a material nice situation and be happy in that nice situation and at the same time have your spiritual dessert afterwards. You can't enter, because there are 10 tridents keeping up all types of consciousness to try to approach the absolute truth through different types of means, whether it's yoga, astanga yoga, this thing, that. You can't approach Krishna's realm like that. So as devotees, we have to accept everything as causeless mercy of Krishna. And one should be more tolerant than a tree. You see? If you read the Shishastika, there's very important points that Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya is God. So whatever he says, there's only 8 things he ever wrote, and that was those Shishastika. And in there it says very clearly that I should be more tolerant than a tree. So tree means, even if Krishna doesn't want to give me any, not even one crumb of mercy, but I will wait millions of lifetimes, but I will wait. I will get it. You see? We should think like that. But what we generally think is that, I'm not so happy, things weren't so good, I feel pretty miserable today. So we get into all this sort of dependency on material situations for our happiness. And we don't really understand what spiritual happiness is. Most people don't understand what spiritual happiness is. Prabhupada, if you look at his life, even Prabhupada as a pure devotee, he went through so much inconvenience in life, so many difficulties in life. There was never a time when Prabhupada was materially well situated. Even when he was preaching, he was always traveling, preaching, whatever. So generally, if you study the Bhagavatam, all the stories in the Bhagavatam, you'll see that Krishna actually makes his devotee suffer. Haridas Thakur was beaten in 21 villages, whipped to death. He didn't die, but he was practically whipped to death. Now he, at that time, was the Namacharya, the most exalted pure devotee of much time. Now, if any of us had to be whipped around 21 villages, practically, suppose I said to you, "Your staying in Krishna consciousness would mean that next month you're going to have to be dragged through 21 villages and beaten to death." I think the guy will be gone. Tomorrow morning you look at his bags and all gone. So we can't estimate the kind of things that go on in devotional service. We can't estimate what Krishna's going to give us and not going to give us. But that's not the point. All of those things are testing. They're testing whether we're actually here for the right purpose. Because if we're not here for the right purpose, we're not going to stay. No way. You don't cheat God. You don't cheat God's energy. You might cheat a few idiots in the material world and go away with it. But you ain't going to cheat Bhakti Devi. So Bhakti Devi, through her material energy, because material energy is the shadow energy of Bhakti, so through her yoga maya, she is going to test you completely, 100%, whether you're ready for this position of being called a devotee of Krishna. I mean, look at Jesus Christ. He preached for a few years and ended up with big nails on a cross. There's no nice stories, you know? But we're always looking, because we want to make a comfortable situation here. Basically, we get the Krishna consciousness because we want a little happiness. That's the bottom line. We're all beggars. And beggars, if you notice, have you ever seen a load of beggars? They've all got one thing in purpose, to gain something, isn't it? So they're all handed, so we're the same. We've all come for a little bit of happiness. And as soon as we get that, we'll be gone. We'll be gone. Psychologically, we'll be gone. We got what we came for. You know? So the point is that be careful not to put too much stress upon this material happy situation. It doesn't exist anyway. That's what we're always preaching to people. We spend hours telling people, you can't be happy in the material world. You're going to be miserable from your mind, your body. Other people will torture you. The material elements will destroy you. But then we ourselves, we're looking every moment for a nice happy situation. So in one sense, we're hypocrites. We don't practice what we preach. Because we tell them this body is a lump of stool, pus, urine, there's worms inside you eating you away, you're going to get old, your teeth are going to fall out, your hair is going to fall out. You know, we're telling people all of this all the time. But then for us, we're thinking, oh, where is that nice, happy situation in Krishna consciousness?
It still leaves them that middle ground where we haven't, you know.
Yeah, so you better move quick. Don't hang around. Don't hang around in the material world. Because it's very, very dangerous to hang around. So in one sense, that urgency to move on is very great. Because if you stay too long in this sort of limbo, stuck, then it's very dangerous. Because you have to move. The soul is dynamic. It has to go one way or the other. Ultimately, either you go back to Godhead or you go back to Godhead. Isn't it? There's no real one or the other. So which do you want to go? Godhead or Godhead? Yeah. So make your mind up. That's called self-determination. Okay, we're finished there. So what I'd like to do, I'd like that you try to, at least this party, Sankirtan party or festival party or whatever, you try to analyze your situation and try and see how to move on, because everything has to move on. Things shouldn't stagnate and become. Now, what I'd like to see also is devotees get out of this mentalism, you know, this sort of mental thing. You're doing a service. It's not the end of the world. You're not going to be doing it for 50 years. You're just doing it because it's a service. So you should capture that particular service and do it nicely. Just like if I go in the kitchen, it doesn't mean I'm going to be in the kitchen every day the rest of my life. It doesn't mean I'm going to be in there all day. It doesn't mean that this is the end of the world because I've ended up in the kitchen. So at least now I'm here. There's an opportunity to serve Krishna. Let me do it nicely. That means doing the needful. So what I'd like to see more is that if we're doing something, let's do it properly. Let's show an example to other people, because there's so much flakiness around. It's going to become so flaky. It's unbelievable from what it was in the early days. In the early days, I tell you, I mean, everyone goes on about it, but there was some real determination, amazing determination. I mean, when I was in London in 1970, 70, 71, If it's the devotees, just they get up in the morning and say, I'm going over to Amsterdam, open the temple, they'll be gone. So I'm going up to Birmingham, I'm going up to, you know. We opened, just in between 70 and 71, we opened up Cardiff, we opened up Edinburgh, we opened up Nottingham, we opened up, Birmingham. There was a temple here in Birmingham. And there was two temples in London. There was Bury Place and there was one in Nottingham. Now nobody asked anyone to do that. That was the amazing thing. No one actually, we didn't have a thing like this and say, you go and open Birmingham. It was just devotees spontaneously feeling the mood of Prabhupada. Then another devotee went to Amsterdam and opened the temple. Another devotee went to Italy and opened the temple. And Prabhupada visited all of those temples, including the one I opened in Edinburgh. I opened the temple in Edinburgh because I heard that Prabhupada was educated by Edinburgh teachers. And Dhananjaya was from Edinburgh. So I said to him, oh, did Prabhupada ever mention about Edinburgh? He said, yeah, he wanted a temple there. I said, okay, let me go. Next day I was gone. I went up to Edinburgh. There's no thought. And when I went to Edinburgh, we were knocking on doors. People's houses, this is not, I'm telling the truth here, in front of Gujarat. We're knocking at people's houses saying, can we come and live with you? Because we're monks. We've been sent there by a guru to open a temple. And we have nowhere to stay. We were knocking on people, middle class kind of housewives would come to the door. They see these balls shaving there with a big tea lock on. Can we come and live in your house? Now you know Scotland, how conservative it is. People were like, come and live here. So yeah, have you got a room we can stay? And we did, we got a room. We got a guy whose wife had died in that room. They never went in there. He said, you can have this room upstairs. So we paid a few pounds rent. And we stayed there for 8 months. Going out every day on Harinam, every day on book distribution. Two of us. And we opened such a temple there, five times the size of this building. And Prabhupada came there, so there's a wonderful temple. He loved it. The point was that we were having a happy time. It wasn't that things were great. We didn't have money. We didn't have anything. We were living on nothing. Our cooking was a gas heater in the room. So what we did was we unscrewed it and we put one of these round, it was a little round thing we bought in the shop. That was our only cooking facility. And then where did we wash our pots? The toilet. We had the toilet and that. That was our only link with Prasada. So all we ate was porridge, boiled potatoes and carrots. And we used to have Sunday feast. And the room was about from this size here, there. And there's a massive double bed, which was the marital bed. So when guests would come on Sunday, they'd sit one side of the bed and we'd sit the other. Because took up so much room. So we'd have about five guests there, and it'd be me giving a lecture to them, like that, across the bed. And sometimes only one guest would come. And it was so funny because we'd bring them in the room, and sometimes it was a young girl or something, and they'd walk in and there's this big double bed. And they thought, what is this? A Hare Krishna temple. We went on like that for 8 months. We made 29 devotees in that temple. It was one of the most thriving temples at that time. So the point is that initiative was there. Not that you have to get into this idea, see what Krishna wants. Prabhupada always used to say, Krishna's in your heart,